Well.
To quote our friend Eric, well. How we doing?
How we doing, kids?
I'm happy to be here.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good. Mm-hmm.
We're making it through another winter in Iowa.
Yes. We are. Yes. We're with teeth and claws just trying to, like, wait, teeth and claws. That's not what I wanted to say.
I wanted to say fingernails.
She is digging in with her teeth.
Get that driveway.
January. That's how I shovel with my teeth and claws.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
After a while, the shovel stops and I just start.
You just get it.
Get in there.
Just get it.
Eat that snow.
So today we're talking about 1985, mm-hmm. the year of our Lord, 1985. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm excited to talk about it.
The year of our Lord. It is. Mm-hmm. 1985.
Yes. But first, as always, we've got some gall that is unmitigated. Mm-hmm. Heath, would you tell us your unmitigated gall to start us off?
I would.
Okay. Great.
There's a television show called Celebrity Jeopardy.
Oh,
yeah.
I have been watching, you know, a lot. I think we started watching. I mean, I like Jeopardy, but we've been watching it because, you know, with the strikes, you know, there wasn't any really new television.
You and I watch so many of the same shows.
Yes. You two are the same person. Yeah.
And while I love the show, I don't love how much time on each episode is Ken Jennings asking celebrities just, you know, chit-chat questions.
Oh.
Right? I feel like it's too much. Because they spread the episodes out to an hour.
Uh-huh.
So there's there's Jeopardy, Double Jeopardy, Triple Jeopardy, and then Final Jeopardy. And so they've just got some time to fill because they can't, you know, I don't know if they don't want to ask longer questions or what they want to do. But it's not great. Like, let them talk about their charity. There doesn't need to be two rounds of this. And there are two rounds of it.
Oh, that's too much. Mm-hmm. These celebrities, they already get enough time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What kind of celebrities are we dealing with, by the way?
I mean, Cynthia Nixon was a contestant.
Okay.
Yep.
Stephen Weber.
That's who I thought of right away. Yeah. Stephen Weber.
Okay.
Katie, what's her last name from Abbott Elementary?
Oh, Lisa Ann Walter?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, like, legit people.
Mohawk.
Yeah. Like, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And some of them, I mean, some of them are legitimately smart. Some of them are not.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like Sherry Shepherd is not particularly smart.
No.
Okay. No.
Probably the most disappointing one to me, though, was Emily Hampshire, who played Stevie on Schitt's Creek.
That was hard to watch.
Yes.
Oh, no. She was bad?
Yeah.
Real bad.
But then she would, she was buzzing in and then would say, like, jokey answers. Like, things she didn't know.
Okay.
And it was like, this isn't really funny. Like, this isn't your time to make jokes, you know. So,
no, it didn't go well. It felt like what was happening was she was, like, real-time panicking and, like, not getting the answers. And that translates real bad on Celebrity Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, you know, it's a good show. It's besides the Ken Jennings of it all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ken so Jennings. Overall, you think Ken Jennings is the gall or just his fact of too much celebrity?
No, when Ken Jennings is actually asking the actual Jeopardy questions, like, I'm on board.
Okay.
Good for you.
All right.
Mm-hmm. You did good, Ken. But I was also a little bit annoyed, too, because I found out who won before I watched the episode.
Me too.
Because Instagram is like, here, I got a suggestion for you. And I was like, I don't follow Celebrity Jeopardy. I don't follow the person who won. I don't follow any of that. Like, why are you doing this to me, Instagram?
God, they're watching you.
It's a real jerk move.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They're watching you watch TV.
They probably are.
Yeah.
And I bet they're excited about it.
I bet they are. They're like, how many housewives can one man watch in a day?
You're confusing they with my husband.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry.
I was going to say, that sounds like my husband.
That sounds like,
is this a different one? Like, why do these ladies look different? I'm like, listen, we're in four seasons right now. I don't have time to explain it to you. So much viewing to get to. Jeez, man.
All right, Aaron, what's your goal?
Oh, wow.
Settle in, everybody.
You know, I had a different one, and then I thought about this a lot this week, and it's my unmitigated gall this week is Ron DeSantis's smile, because fuck you very much for making me laugh. I want to hate everything about you. I look at you and I hate you. And then when you do that weird smile, like your lips have never formed a smile before, and it feels like it's cracking for the first time. And I get this montage in my head. Like, kids' movies, like Care Bears, all this stuff, like, we did it, he's smiling. And then it makes me laugh because it's so bad. And then I hate it because it's like this tiny moment of his face that brought me joy. And I want to throw myself off a cliff.
Yeah.
So fuck you, Ron DeSantis, smile. First of all, if you're in your 40s and you don't know how to smile, I mean, that's all I need to know.
Yeah.
You're clearly a sociopath.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Second of all, how do you have people on the team working, PR people, coming up with campaign, coming up with stuff, having to deal with, you know, a political campaign, and no one said, hey, let's workshop the smile. Hey, guys, this isn't translating on screen great. You know how he doesn't ever smile in real life? We're going to have to figure that out.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But no, they just said, let it happen.
But what if this is the workshop smile? Like, this is after the workshopping. This is what we have now.
Oh, now you just blew my mind again. You're right. He did. You know he did.
Yeah, he paid a consultant a shit ton of money to help him smile. And that's where
like
they got
that weird, cracked,
yeah,
rock face.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, RIP to your campaign, Ron DeSantis. So sorry. So sorry to see you go. But
I don't know about in peace.
That's what I was thinking. Like, no, rest in fire or something. I don't know. Like,
burn in fiery hell.
Burn in Florida hell. Yeah.
Maybe that's something to keep in mind for next time is pay more for the consultant on your smile.
Yeah. Also, when you buy your high heels, maybe he should come out with a line of men's high heels that are camouflaged so you can't tell they're high heels.
Yeah.
Like that's a way to make money. If he was a Real Housewife, that's how he would make money.
You're right. You are absolutely right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And I mean, while we're at it, white boots? Nope.
Yeah.
Just gonna say. No.
Or he could really double down on the white boots and sell them like he's selling his high heels. I mean, this could be a new career path. We can get him out of politics. Mm-hmm. Leave Florida alone. And, you know, he could just sell his footwear.
He'd be great on QVC.
Oh,
yeah. He would be. Well, just don't let him smile. Just, for God's sakes, don't smile. I don't even know, like, I'm left to assume that your kids have never brought you joy, Ron DeSantis.
No.
You cannot. There's no...
Do you think he's ever felt joy in his life?
I don't think so.
I don't think so
I think
either.
That's how you get to be a grown-up Chucky doll.
Yeah.
With dark hair. Like, that's kind of what he reminds me of, you know?
That reminds me of, I saw John Oliver in an interview once where he was talking about, he was trying to interview Ron DeSantis and, you know, kept getting pushback, of course. But he kept trying to fact check one particular thing. And that was that he had heard a story that Ron, when he was younger, would, on dates, deliberately mispronounce Thai food as thigh food. And if the date corrected him, he'd be like, done, out, don't want to date you anymore. And John Oliver's
so grossed out right now.
And John Oliver's thought was like, I don't know if that's true, but it feels true. Uh-huh. It feels like
my
it's
whole
true.
My body kind of went numb. Right? Like I felt so.
But that made me think maybe that's how he got joy. Something like that.
Oh, that is. You're right.
That's how he got joy. But he didn't smile from it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how he got joy.
It's like that Weekend Update thing where they show like pictures of Mitch McConnell and they'll be like, here, watching, you know, kids die in a plane crash. That's like what Ron DeSantis' face is. It's always like, oh, kids finding out that they're not getting adopted. Like, it's always what his face looks like. It's just horrific. And that would not surprise me if that was a test.
It feels true, like John Oliver says.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Feels true.
As a random note from this week, because you brought up the interviews, Gayle King was interviewing Tim Scott on the CBS morning show after he threw his, you know, support behind Trump, which was kind of a shock for everyone. And she was trying to fact check one thing. And sometimes Gayle King does not get enough journalistic credit because she would not let it go. And Tim, he was so uncomfortable and he kept trying to change the subject. And he's like, ask me about something else. And she said, answer the question.
Whoa.
Like super deadpan. Like, and then you could see, I don't know if a producer or something said something in her ear because she's like, okay, fine, let's talk about your love life. And she just like went a totally different direction. But it was really uncomfortable.
Get it,
and I was
Gayle.
Like, get it.
Yeah.
Get it. Oh.
Well, that's some good gall.
Yeah.
And rest in fire again, because like you said, peace is not peace is not for him. Not for
him. That's a new, whole new phrase for me to use. Rest in fire.
I like it. Yeah. My gall is human skin.
Oh,
because
shit.
regularly, like you know, Ziggy the cat, like when he's playing, you know, we're having a good time, whatever. And then suddenly we're in murder mode, right? Mm-hmm. And he brings out his claws and, you know, grips or whatever. And I'm, yeah. And I always tell him, buddy, human skin is stupid. You can't play like that because I'm going to get bloody and whatever. I don't think he cares, first off.
No.
But
no.
I like that idea that human skin is stupid. And it's proving itself out because we're in January, the dreariest, hardest month of the year. And my skin feels like it's stretched no matter how much moisturizer I put on. It feels itchy no matter how much, like, my eyes are always itchy no matter how much eye cream or whatever, all that shit. Everything hurts on my skin. We are not made for this world.
No.
Human skin is not made for this world. Because then, once we're in the summer, all the sweat and everything is irritating. And we're burning once we're out in the sun. So I don't know who designed this, but I don't like it. I don't like it.
So you would prefer some sort of other outer situation as opposed to our
epidermis? Epidural? Epidemis? Not epidural.
No. Yeah, that's a different
epididymis?
Epidermis? Yeah, that's...
Yeah, you know how back on Broads and Books I talked about how the human bladder is bullshit?
Yeah.
And we needed...
It
we
is.
Needed,
yeah.
We needed like her. We need like a machine or something like that. Maybe we need some sort of mechanized skin. I don't know. I don't know.
Like that just heals its, like...
Yes.
I mean, skin does heal itself, but I mean like goes over. Yeah, I got you.
Somehow. Okay. I don't know what the solution to this is, but as we said, this is gall and I'm just venting right now.
Yeah.
Have you tried baby oil?
Okay.
It's made from real babies.
Then you know it's good. Then you know. Yeah. And, you know, we were talking to a friend of ours who's having some skin issues, and it's just always, and with women too, like we're now in times where our hormones are like giving us weird acne and rashes and all this shit. And I'm like, I'm done. I don't understand it and I don't like it.
Yeah.
So skin is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Traitor.
It is.
It is. It's betraying us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks for letting me get that off my chest.
That was a great unmitigated gall because I didn't know where it was going.
Yeah.
And I liked where it went.
Okay.
So
I like that, you know, I got to bring in my cat and his murder mode because it happens a lot.
Murder mode.
And yeah. Well, after that skin note, should we move on to 1985?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I
bet
time.
My skin was a lot better in 1985.
I don't know how to comment on that in a way that doesn't bring in ageism.
I feel like where I went with it is that your parents were still in charge of your skin, so it probably wasn't.
Good point. Because we did establish this is a year where we're going to be like, oh, Amy survived childhood. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, good point.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Heath, do you want to start us off with 1985?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us something good.
Yes. Let's talk about film in the year 1985.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's talk about film.
Film. Cinema.
Cinematic feature.
So there was a movie in 1985 called Just One of the Guys.
Oh, my God.
Didn't see it. Nope. Didn't know about it.
I didn't know that was this year. I was obsessed with this movie. Yes, go ahead.
So it's actually the movie. It's based on Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, which I did not know.
What?
Yeah.
It is?
Uh-huh.
They brought tits into a Shakespeare adaptation.
Uh-huh. They sure did.
Wow.
Finally. I never saw the movie in the theater, but I probably watched it, I don't know, like 200 times on cable.
Yes.
It was on cable TV all the time. And the film centers around Terry Griffith. She's an aspiring teen journalist in Arizona. And her journalism teacher is sexist, which is, you know, that's my description of it, not hers. They don't say that in the movie. And he doesn't really take her writing seriously. She thinks it's because of her looks.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that having a teenager complain that they're not being taken seriously because they're too pretty hits differently on this side of 40. Like, when I saw this movie as a kid, I was like, yeah, this sucks. Poor you. And now I'm just like, come on.
Come on, sweetie.
You know, maybe you're too annoying than too pretty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's the thing.
Yeah.
So Terry applies for her quote-unquote dream job as a newspaper intern. But she does not get it.
It's cute that you have a dream job at 17.
Yeah.
And again, she thinks it's because of her looks. And I'm deeply sad that a newspaper intern is her dream job. Like, I feel like, you know, reach a little higher.
That does feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as with all great teen movies, the parents are out of town for a couple of weeks on vacation, so they're nowhere to be found.
Mm-hmm.
In their absence, Terry enrolls at a nearby high school, but does so as a boy Because everyone knows that boys named Terry are taken seriously 100% of the time.
1,000%. Yep.
They'll get their dream job.
Yeah.
On her first day at this new school, she meets Rick Morehouse, who she thinks would be cute if she gave him a makeover, which she does. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, totally under the radar. I'm a new boy at school. I'm going to find another boy, give him a makeover.
It'll be fine. Yeah.
That will totally won't blow my cover at all. Yeah. Yeah.
So Terry and Rick are bullied by Greg, who is played by William Zabka, who was Johnny in The Karate Kid.
The ultimate 80s bully.
Yeah. And his dad's apparently from Des Moines. I found that. Yeah, in reading about this.
So he got his bullying knowledge here in Iowa. Good.
We can stay claim
Good for
to that.
Them.
So he's a little less threatening in this movie than in The Karate Kid, but he's still like what I would call an entire a-hole. So, as the movie goes on, they're at the prom, which is on a beach.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, their whole prom is on a beach. Greg picks a fight with Rick and loses in front of the whole class. The bully loses in front of the whole class.
Oh.
Terry's boyfriend, who was away at college, shows up at prom for some reason. And then everyone thinks Terry's gay and not a teenage girl in a suit. And I'm just like, wake up, Arizona. So to prove everyone at prom... To prove to everybody at prom that she's not gay, Terry opens her shirt before telling Rick she loves him, but he rejects her. And this is
even
weird.
After seeing the naked boobs.
Rick.
And it's wild because I remember seeing the boobs out, and I was just like, how did nobody notice these? Just because she was wearing a button down?
Because they're big. I remember
they were
that
big.
Clearly. Yes.
Yeah.
Huh.
So after the beach prom nightmare, Terry returns to her old school. And writes a long article about what it was like living as a boy, which reminds me of that time Tyra Banks had her talk show and she put on a fat suit and she went out and then she came back and like reported on
how
she
God,
was
I forgot about that.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Uh-huh.
That was both the level of gall.
So the article gets printed in the school newspaper and she finally earns her dream job as newspaper intern because they were so impressed with that.
Her undercover work,
So soon after, Rick gives her another chance, and they have maybe the funnest story to tell when someone asks how they met.
That's amazing.
If they, you know, still, if they're still together today, they're telling all sorts of inappropriate stories at family Christmases.
Right.
Yeah. It's after I saw her boobs that I really knew, like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can do this.
This is it.
I'm not gay. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
I didn't need that makeover. I just needed those boobs.
Uh-huh. And neighbors are like, how did you not see those?
Yeah.
That was an excellent choice,
yes.
Heath.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
That's a deep cut. And
that,
I like it.
Oh, man. I feel like I'm sitting here right now wanting to watch that movie again.
Isn't that what Heath always brings?
Yes.
Like, then we're like, we should stop and watch that movie.
We should stop it and do a live viewing for the audience.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
agree.
Funny. We keep talking about this young gal's breasts. You know, which is what people come to this podcast for, I think.
Obviously.
But like
they want to hear you talk about breasts particularly.
We're obviously all the foremost experts.
Right. But like the movie poster is her standing in a locker room with two football helmets over her chest. So, I mean, they're kind of nodding to it.
Okay.
She's so inappropriate.
I was about to go into another fake marketing meeting.
You should. What would the marketing meeting sound like for that one?
Boobs, guys. Okay. Don't bury the lead.
I think in the 80s at movie studios, they just had a weekly meeting, a standing meeting just called Boobs.
Boobs.
And they would just be like, how do we get them out there
how
more?
How many boobs do we have this week?
Right. Yeah, the whole plot line centers on boobs. Let's put it on the poster.
We got a new screenplay in. It's all boobs.
Boobs.
Let's do it.
Boobs. All right. Well, I'm going to take you to a toy from 1985.
Okay.
It was released in September. Mm. It's a little teddy bear known as Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh, shit. This was 85?
And I had...
Oh! We've got visual aids.
I had a deep love over this thing. I didn't have one. But it's in case you don't know, it was an animatronic stuffed toy, which means that it had mechanical and electronical parts that allowed... Electronicals, not a word.
Yeah, electronical. I like it. Keep it. Keep it.
Parts that allow the toy to have a voice and moving body parts. And you would put like a tape in and it would read you a story. which I thought was just so exciting that you could have that mm-hmm. this animal could read you a toy, right? So it was mass produced by Worlds of Wonder when it first came out in 1985 to about 1990, and then Hasbro got it and released it from 1991 to 1996, and then it disappeared, and then it came back to us.
Oh my goodness.
In 2017 to 2019, produced by Wicked Cool Toys.
And you can see
it. It took a weird turn.
Does Teddy Ruxpin have a Boston accent in this time?
Is he a Wahlburger?
He should. Also, you can buy a vintage one on eBay for $450.
Oh, no.
Which told me a lot. Now I want to show you the generic one that I had.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I just had the generic version.
Okay.
The generic version of Teddy Ruxpin was Mother Goose. A terrifying goose whose eyes just opened and closed while she read stories. And you lifted the wing to put the cassette in. I got it as a gift. I think someone, like a family friend, somebody gave it to us. I was terrified of the goose.
It's terrifying.
At one hand, I wanted to love it because it was like my Teddy Ruxpin thing come to life. On the other hand, I understand why I frequently run from geese. This is a terrifying.
How would you describe this, Heath? I'm trying to find the words for it.
Unfriendly comes to mind.
Yeah.
I also don't know why she's wearing a bonnet, no other clothing.
Yes, like, that's where I went.
Why is her?
There's a jaunty scarf and a bonnet that's like twice the size of her head.
Yeah.
And then she has a look on her face that's like, yeah, bitch, I'm going to read you a story.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's sort of the attitude she brought to the story.
She doesn't
it was just
kind of
like, her voice wasn't Teddy Ruxpin's voice. It was a lot. So I just wanted you to be able to understand why Teddy Ruxpin was important to me.
I feel like this Mother Goose would probably not hesitate to tell you all the things she gave up to be here to read the story to you.
Yes.
She is a harried middle-aged mom. It's just like, I know I'm a substitute, all right?
Right. Which is what you already had reading books.
Yes.
I don't need that energy in my fake electronic toy. Plus, it really freaked me out that I had to lift up her wing and just put it in her side.
Yeah.
The cassette.
It feels very clinical and like, you know.
Like you're crossing a line.
Exactly.
Also, she just had like run-of-the-mill stories, and I'm going to read you a few titles of Teddy Ruxpin stories, what he actually had, which sounded a lot better than just like your run-of-the-mill like Mother Goose stories, which is what you got with the goose. He had stories like The Missing Princess, You've Got to Take Care of You.
One title?
Yeah. What does that even mean? I don't know, Teddy Ruxpin doing self-care in 1985?
Wait a minute. So it's The Real Princess, colon, You Gotta Take Care of
The
You?
The Missing Princess, colon, You've Got to Take Care of You.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So out there just teaching survival techniques, apparently.
That
sounds like New Kids on the Block
Here's
song.
Another one. Grubby's Romance, colon, Falling in Love is Something Special.
What is this?
Grubby's Romance.
Okay, I need a marketing meeting for like the people behind these stories. Like, are they just like, let's fuck with these
shrooms.
Kids?
Because they were just all on shrooms. Because the characters that came, Teddy Ruxpin's stories were like original, and they had original characters in them, like Grubby and these other characters that did stories. Like the Mother Goose came with stories you already knew, like, you know, Three Little Pigs and, you know, like fairy tales type stuff. But Teddy Ruxpin was all original. So Grubby was a friend of...
So yes. Teddy Ruxpin had characters, which the same characters which drove from one story to the next.
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah, so there's some dudes that are high on shrooms making up these characters and stories.
I feel like, remember, we all know that the people that wrote Elf were like very much on drugs when they wrote that. I feel like these are the people that couldn't get a job at Elf. They were writing the Teddy Ruxpin
stories. They were like third tier choices.
Yeah, because there's another one called All About Bears, colon, When Is a Bear Not a Bear?
Do they mean actual bears or like plus size gay men?
That's the real question.
We don't know.
That's the real
question. But I like that meeting on shrooms where there's like, guys, when is a bear not a bear? And they're like, what makes a bear a bear? I could be a bear. Like, you just know that it just, and then they wrote a story. My all-time favorite that we need to bring back, I feel like right now, in this climate, in an election year, for people to understand election deniers and misinformation, Wooly and the Giant Snozos. Do you believe everything you hear? didn't have Teddy Ruxpin. I had the goose. I can't even speak to these stories. But...
What kind of stories did the goose tell again?
Like Three Little Pigs. Oh, okay. You know, so your Little Red Riding Hood.
Your basic Mother Goose stories.
Your standard fare. Okay. She wasn't bringing... That was not bringing anything original to the table.
No, that bitch didn't care.
Yeah, no.
She's like, you know this fucking story already, yeah. But I'll tell it again.
Don't you remember and blow the house down? You're a fucking idiot, kid. Jesus. No wonder no one wants to read
Listen.
To you.
Listen, yeah.
Why don't you learn how to read yourself?
Yeah.
You little dummy.
Also, I really like the idea that maybe there were two gay men in the marketing meeting mm-hmm. that were like, when is a bear not a bear? Let's talk about it.
Like, can you believe they made that? I can't even believe they made that. They listened to us.
Wow.
So when I found out that he came out this year, I just immediately was like, everyone needs to remember Teddy Ruxpin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I never had one. Did you have one, Heath?
I did not.
No. Nope. Because they were expensive, too, weren't
they? They were very yeah. expensive. Yeah. Yes. I remember it was like a really...
It was a hot commodity.
Yeah. It was a hot commodity. So rest in peace, Teddy Ruxpin, and rest in fire, Mother Goose.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. So glad I coined so many words. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to bring us into the literary world, all right? Ooh. I'm going to bring us, you know...
I think we're already there, Mother Goose.
You're right. I'm sorry.
I didn't bring fine literature with Teddy Ruxpin and the Snozos. Come on.
Let me continue in the literary vein, I should say. All right. Which is that this is the year that The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood was published.
Oh. Did you see this on the list and just think, Amy's got this?
That's a light, fun read.
let me tell you a fun story about little Amy. So she was obsessed with nuclear war and Russians and the Holocaust and global warming and all the things.
Jesus Christ. You gotta warn me before you say shit like that. That's a lot.
I was 8 this year, and like 8, 9, 10, just reading the Des Moines Register every morning, like, oh my God, what is happening in the world? That's where I was at. Okay.
All right.
And you're a fantastic cartoon character.
You should
like,
be.
Child Amy is a great cartoon character.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Where I'm like walking, I was walking home from school one day, and it was in January, and it was like 60 degrees. I'm like, we're fucked. The world is fucked. Global warming is here.
She yells at the other children who are like on bikes and just being like, it's so nice out.
You don't understand.
We're all going to die.
I would yell at people in the family, turn the lights off when you're not in the room. We got to save the world. Okay, so that's background. All right.
Okay, background. All right. Got so it. The scene has been set.
A few years after 1985, the book came out in 1985, but it was a few years after that I found it as a paperback in a gas station turnstile, like on a road trip. And I think my mom got it for me to shut up or something because it was just there. And I read it. And of course, it was way too, you know, adult for me. I only understood, you know, some of it, but I really, really dug it. Like, obviously, it was dark and all the things that I was. And I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I read it like every few years since then. And as I got older and older, I was like, oh man, this makes so much more sense. And then it sort of went all the way around. And in the last like 5-10 years, I'm like, oh fuck. Yeah, we're here. Okay. So that's good that I read all of this. Yeah. I still have the copy. It's right over there, the one that I bought from the gas station turnstile.
Oh, yeah, I see it.
Yeah, uh-huh. And it was my first tattoo. The final line of that book is on my body. It's on my skin, that stupid skin.
That stupid human skin.
But, you know, the skin will at least take tattoos, so there's something there. The Handmaid's Tale. It's a dark, dark fable that at the time felt like kind of because in the 80s it was sort of kind of like now with, you know, evangelicals trying to take over and everything, but feels so much more relevant 30-40 years later because here we are. So
I'm laughing because I'm nervous.
Why are you nervous? What'd I do?
No. have you watched any of the TV show?
No, I was afraid to because I love the book so much.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to in case it went weird or anything like that. I've heard it's terrific. And I know you've said it was really good.
The first season's really good. And the first season's based on the book. And then after that, it kind of goes off in its own direction. And then it is, I would say. I mean, I'm going to finish watching it. I think there's one more season coming out. But it just kind of lost its way. It gets a little... Parts of it are, again, it's like... You can see where this would happen.
Yeah.
But then there are other parts of it. It's just like that person should have been killed several times over.
Okay. Yeah. So I went Hollywood instead of, yeah, that makes sense.
I saw this when I was researching 1985, and I immediately remembered the story from Rods and Books of you finding it on a gas station turnstile. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm going to reiterate that you would make a great cartoon character because that is not, like, no one else has had that experience with that book, I feel like. Like, that was sent... There's any argument for like other energies in the world, that's the best one I've heard.
Someone was like, that poor kid's on a road trip with her mom and she struggling. She's struggling hard and she needs a book that will take her away. Calgon, take me away. It'll be like that, you know? Yeah. That's, if there's a God, that's what happened.
It feels like you had two sort of like guardian angels that maybe took their eye off the ball for a while. Mm. And then they tuned back in. They were like, fuck, what happened? She's yelling about climate change. Oh my God. Give her the Handmaid's Tale. Give it to her now. She's ready.
But then that would backfire because that was one of the things that made me into a feminist.
Oh no.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, you're still doing that?
Yeah, I'm still doing that.
Is that not a phase?
Still doing
it.
Okay,
fine.
Yeah.
Jeez. Let me know when it's over.
Yep. So I was a little feminist.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that sorry I made you uncomfortable, Heath. Why don't you go ahead with the next one?
Are you sure it's not looking at you that's making you uncomfortable? You can turn it over.
It might be Mother Goose.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I'm going to talk about now.
Oh.
WrestleMania.
Oh! WrestleMania. Wow. Yes. Yeah.
The very, very first WrestleMania took place on March 31st, 1985.
Wow.
It was at Madison Square Garden in New York City. And it was, you know, WWF, which is now known as the WWE because the World Wildlife Foundation was like, we can't both be the WWF.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, almost 20,000 people were there in attendance for the event. And it was seen by more than a million people via closed circuit TV, which is kind of... The original version of pay-per-view. Like,
Yeah, because it was later, in later iterations, it was always like pay-per-view, wasn't it? You had to pay to get the,
Yep. And I remember this, I loved pro wrestling so much that like in Parkersburg, like, you know, we could go to sit in the bar at the bowling alley because they would get it. Or my friend Josh's cousin had a satellite and we would, we would ask his cousin to record it on VHS.
Wow.
And then we'd go get the VHS afterwards and then we'd be up till like the middle of the night watching it.
Fantastic.
That's amazing. So you didn't want to spend time with this person. You just made them record it to you.
He was like 6 or 7 years old in this.
Oh,
he was, yeah. Like, we were like 12 years old and he was like 18.
Oh,
and
it
was
like,
he was not going to sit around.
The,
yeah.
That would have been. Just being like, record that for me and I'll come grab it.
We would have totally sat around with him to watch it live. But yeah. We couldn't do that. So there was on WrestleMania, there were 9 matches on the card. And the main event was Hulk Hogan and Mr. T, who had both appeared in Rocky III a couple years earlier. Versus Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff and Rowdy Roddy Piper. Muhammad Ali was the referee for the main event.
Whoa!
What?
Yeah, and Billy Martin served as the ring announcer. He was with the Yankees, I think. He was a baseball player.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, Liberace was on hand as the timekeeper for the match.
What? These are the weirdest details. I think this is multiple choice, and we have to take out the one that's
of
not true.
All the people to manage time, I would not have chosen Liberace.
Yeah,
feels like he has his own time.
Right, yeah. He seems like he'd be a little flaky about it.
Yeah.
I'm blown away. Okay.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So Cindy Lauper was also there.
She was.
She served as the manager of wrestler Wendy Richter, who defeated Leilani Kai to win the WWF Women's Championship. And I will say this, for my money, Leilani Kai may be one of the greatest names of anyone or anything ever.
That's a really good name.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's now at the top of my list for potential names for future pets.
Oh, good. Okay.
Which also includes Serena Vanderwoodson and Anastasia Beaverhausen. Those are the top three.
Please name a cat. Serena Vander.
Immediately because
so yeah, like I said, I was a big pro wrestling fan when I was a kid, and I had the posters and I had the t-shirts, and I even had the Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy.
which was
a pillow that looked like Hulk Hogan.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
which they were really popular though.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And they seem like someone who's really, whoever thought of that was really laying out the red carpet for perverts, I thought. Like, that was just.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, Hulk Hogan's not a great guy, but he doesn't deserve whatever happened to him. in pillow form.
Yeah,
you know? So my brothers and friends and I, we would plan these big elaborate pro wrestling shows in my parents' basement when we were kids.
Oh,
and we'd have costumes and we'd beat the hell out of each other. It was so much fun. But yeah, I mean, we had like the belts.
Amazing.
We had like, it was the whole thing.
Wow.
Like I'm sure we ruined more than one couch by like just fighting on it.
At that point, I bet your parents were like, just let him do it. Yeah. Let him tear this shit apart. I don't care.
Earlier when I said I would love to give a certain amount of money to see something, I want to take all that money back. And I want home videos of.
Yes. I want to see little Keith.
Yeah.
With his homemade costume.
Yes.
Doing like a pile driver or something. Yeah.
Good job, pile driver. That was impressive.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we got out of it mostly uninjured. I mean, once in a while, somebody would get a mild concussion.
Sure.
You know, it's a child. Fine. You can bounce back from that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember being at a birthday party for my friend John in February of 1989 in the main event, which was a WWF TV show. It was one where Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man like got in a big fight, you know, because they were buddies, and then they got in a big fight. Boy. And I kept leaving the bowling party to go to the bar to watch the TV show, and his mom kept coming to get me and like, you need to come back to the bowling. And I'm like, this is important. I can't just walk away and bowl. Like, important shit is happening. Like, essentially,
you obviously don't know.
Right. This is on you for scheduling the birthday party this night.
Right, right. I mean, cancel bowling. Get everybody in here. Shut them up. Watch this. And I've been to pro wrestling 3 times.
Wow.
What? Yeah. You have?
Yeah. And I remember the first time I saw it was in Cedar Rapids. And the people in front of us were standing on their chairs. My mom told them to get down, and they did. But I heard one of them call her a bitch after they got down.
Yeah.
And I asked if she heard that, and she said yes, and then just shrugged her shoulders. And I was just like, I get it. All right, I see you. Like, that was probably the epitome of cool for her, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Okay. So, pro wrestling. WrestleMania.
Wow. Can I ask many follow-up questions.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of which is, what do you think it was about wrestling that you loved so much?
As a kid,
yeah.
I think it was like the stories. Uh-huh. And it was, I mean, I didn't really like to watch football. I didn't really like to watch baseball. And,
right.
You know, and this is like, oh, well, this is a sport. See, I'm a sporty kid.
A sporty guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think as an adult, it probably, looking back, I don't think this occurred to me at the time, but it was also like, you know, everybody's wearing spandex.
Absolutely.
Like, that was probably on some level that was there.
So you liked the soap opera aspect of it. Yeah,
yeah.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sure you have follow-up questions. Do you have follow-up questions?
My mind's kind of blown.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd like to say I do, but I was good until he said he was reenacting them in the That's where I've stayed. So,
is there any video evidence of that?
I do not think so.
Okay, bummer.
I do not think so. I do remember times like when me and my brother would get in trouble. And like, I remember once we got grounded from wrestling for a week. Like, we couldn't watch it, consume it in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, no.
And I was like, this is bullshit. I like it more than him, so I'm getting punished more than he is.
This is not equitable.
Wow. Who was your favorite wrestler?
I liked the Ultimate Warrior.
Okay.
And I liked Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
These are excellent names that I didn't know.
You know who terrified me?
Who?
This is probably way later, but The Undertaker.
Oh, yeah.
I was terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah, did your love of wrestling continue into the 90s with, like, some of the names that we probably know now?
I don't know really anybody who participates now.
Okay.
I guess The Rock doesn't really do it anymore, but, like John Cena, I don't think does it.
Yeah.
But I know him more as an actor.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there was... I mean, it went away for a while, like in the mid-90s, and then like, you know, when The Rock and Steve Austin came back and stuff, that was more interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. Does your love persist today?
I do not currently watch it. Once in a while, I'll you know, if I come across something, I might watch it.
Does it feel like nostalgia when you watch it? Like a really, oh, I love this so much kind of thing? Or is it like, oh, it's not as good as it used to be?
I think it is. And of course, I'm going to bring up The Real Housewives.
Yeah.
But I think it is like, I feel like the people that are doing the wrestling now came into it kind of self-aware.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, you know, they were able to, you know, it was a little more, I don't know if pure is the right word, but yeah. You know, 30, 40 years ago, like, they didn't have as much to sort of glean from, like, all the years it had been on TV.
It was more original.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. Wow.
That's amazing.
All right. I think my questions are over for now.
Okay.
Okay. But yeah. That's fine. Okay.
That
makes sense.
I loved everything about that so much.
I do too.
You know, every time, as we've said before, every episode, we reveal a little bit more about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Heath was a WWF, now E, obsessive, just really speaks to me. I don't know why.
I had the same feeling I had during the ACTs a couple times where I was like, this doesn't make sense. And that's sort of where I went, where I was like, are we being punked? Does this follow? And then I was like, oh, so many details.
So many.
And it follows.
It follows. It really does.
I really like
it. Wow. Yeah. So what do you think, Erin? You ready for yours?
I am. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a tough transition.
Okay. Yeah. I
mean, but
there's nowhere to go. Yeah.
I'm going to take you to a little feature called Gem and the Holograms.
I didn't know that was this year.
Yeah. Oh, I was.
I've got a lot to say about this, and it's all right here.
No. I was obsessed with Gem and the Holograms.
Yes.
I had a Barbie, a Gem, or a doll, whatever that was at some point. But if you're unaware, which.
How dare you?
How could you be?
Yeah.
Jerrica Benton is the owner and manager of Starlight Music. She's also known as Gem, Gem and the Holograms, because
her name was Jerrica.
Yeah. Her dad invented Synergy, which is a computer that was capable of creating audiovisual technology known as the holograms.
What?
And she could project the hologram of Gem onto herself with the help of her earrings. So in case you're wondering if this was a master of disguise, I went ahead and brought a visual aid of Gem as a hologram. And Gem is Jerrica. Can see some similarities.
I would not have recognized at all. Mm-mm.
What I love, though, is also the outfit's basically the same.
The same thing.
It's the same. Yeah. It's so much the same. But essentially, hijinks ensue in the show. And basically what she's trying to do is keep other bands at bay from getting the technology. And also caring for the 12 foster girls that were also in her care.
What?
She had so many jobs.
Yeah.
She was running a music label. She was the lead singer of a rock band. She was running an orphanage.
Yeah.
What?
12 foster girls called the Starlight Girls. That No, I completely blanked out on this part too. When I read it in the research, I was like, wait, what?
Were they child labor? And then I
started remembering the episodes with the girls, but yeah.
What the hell?
So they did go on to release a 2015 like live action movie version, which is trash.
Okay,
so I don't
was gonna assume.
Just
yeah.
don't. I credit this. I loved this show, and I credited it with really pushing forward the idea that accessories are an incredibly important part of an outfit.
Yeah.
And that you can have multiple jobs. You can be in a band, you can fight crime, and you can have foster kids.
You can have it all.
You can have it all if you have hologram technology.
You gotta have the earrings. Gotta have the tech.
Which were like the biggest plasticky earrings. Like they were like lightning bolts, but like triple the size of what they were. They were very, I remember that in all
the
doll.
So it's not like spy gear. Like these are very prominent.
They're
earrings.
Very prominent.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, and Jerrica always wore them too. Like these are the only two people that had the same earrings, and no one ever really picked up on. Very Superman Clark Kent glasses
thing. Very.
And I remember the doll came with the earrings, and I remember being really upset that the earrings didn't come out of the. Like, I couldn't get them out of her ears.
Were you trying to put them on yourself?
I probably.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I thought I could make other Barbies into Gem. You know, let's check the hologram technology.
The technology. Yeah.
And you couldn't.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
But I watched the show. I loved this show. Mm-hmm. It's got roots in Japanese animation. That's mm-hmm. the main people that did it, which makes wow. a lot of sense now when you look at the style. I mean, I wouldn't have had any knowledge of that then, but fascinating. And they sang, and I was obsessed. Mm-hmm. Everything about it.
I'm trying to remember the theme song.
Their whole vibe,
truly
too.
Truly outrageous. Truly, truly, truly outrageous.
Lyrical genius.
Yeah.
I knew you wouldn't let me down.
No, because I couldn't tell you what it was. What else? Did you find anything else?
Yeah. Like, one of the things, so the band, the Holograms, so it was Jerrica and her sister Kimber, and then Aja and Shayna, who were foster kids that Jerrica's dad adopted. So they all grew up together. And then in later seasons, Rhea was hired as the drummer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there was all of them. And then she had her boyfriend, Rio Pacheco.
Wait, say that again.
Rio Pacheco. Uh-huh. That was his name. And what is, when you think about it, so Rio was dating Jerrica, right? Okay. But he also had the hots for Jim. Oh. So Jim and Jerrica are the same person. So Jerrica's very well aware that Rio is stepping out on her. With her. He just doesn't get that it's a different person or that it's the same person.
Oh my God.
So there was this whole thing of just like they don't really ever acknowledge it, but I mean, like they were sort of signing off on like this guy two-timing her.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That was kind of the whole
thing.
And
she was fine with it.
Yeah.
She's like, haha, joke's on you.
Right. Yeah.
Whoops.
Don't you think I have the same moves? What?
Also, I wear the same clothes, dummy.
I mean.
So instead, she was running a music label.
Okay.
She was running an orphanage. Mm-hmm. She was the lead singer of a rock band.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
She had two different relationships going at the same time.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And she was fighting crime.
Yes, she was fighting crime. And she,
so much work.
So much work.
And they were fighting for their lives, really, because the Misfits,
yeah.
the rival band, mm-hmm. were after them all the time and like literally trying to murder them on several occasions.
Yes. How Jem isn't on a quarter, I'll never understand.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's
doing
a
the most.
Feminist icon.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
So some of the things, let's see, that the Misfits would always try to make it out like it was a prank. That's the way it would start, but it would always turn into something much, much worse than like, they got tossed overboard from a ship out in the middle of the ocean and then like had to live on a deserted island for a while before anyone found them. Mm-hmm. There was a hang gliding incident. And a runaway train incident, like mm-hmm, several mm-hmm. times they were almost killed mm-hmm, because mm-hmm, of the Misfits mm-hmm. and like no one, the police were never called, like the Misfits never went to jail. But the lead singer of the Misfits, I always thought this was really funny too. Her real name was Phyllis Gabor.
What?
Like not the actress who played her, like the voice actress, like that was the character's real name. Her name was Pizzazz, like that's what she called
Pizzazz,
herself. That,
yeah, yeah.
Right, that was her stage name, but Pizzazz's real name is Phyllis Gabor. And I just loved how they'd always use it to like make her out to be such a total poser, you know?
Because she sounds like she's like our age, like she's,
yeah.
you know,
Phyllis, yeah.
an
yeah.
old lady that's smoking like two packs a day.
Right.
And, she sounds yeah. like she'd be the band manager. I'm Phyllis yes. Gabor, I'm here with the Misfits. Like... Yeah.
Yeah. You can't yeah. take my advantage of my clients.
Yeah.
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 yeah. And she, I mean, her dad was rich and he was always sort of kind mm-hmm. of, she was spoiled, but he was always kind of over her too. Like okay. she was always being pretty bratty, you okay. know, so he'd show up every once in a while and point that out.
I've already said it this episode, but again, we watch so many of the same shows.
Yeah. Yes.
And we both landed on Jem and the Holograms for 1985 is just the best.
It's fantastic.
I did watch the whole thing. I have it on DVD. I have all of it on DVD.
You do not.
Oh, my God.
What?
So how many seasons was it? How much was it?
There was only three seasons. It seemed like it went on further.
Yeah.
But there was only three. And again, it speaks to like what we're willing to tolerate as children. Because yeah. there was only like... 30 episodes in a season. So they'd play it every day after school. So
yes.
like in 6 weeks, they're through it and they just start over.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, okay.
Great.
I'm here for that. I'll watch it again.
So
and again.
You'd watch, you know, it'd be on for like, you know, the whole year. You'd watch every episode 7 times when it would air and you didn't care, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I know
great show.
Michael watched some of it with me when I rewatched it. And his favorite song from the show and in life is called Taking a Train. By Jem and the Holograms. And it goes like this.
Okay.
Taking a train, taking a train. taking a train. And that's why he loves it.
To be clear, listeners, all the visuals are going to be on our social, as is Lizzo taking a train.
Yep. The new cover song, it's going to hit the charts.
Yep. I will find a clip and we will put it out there. Oh, my God. I'm sorry I stole one off your list.
No, that's good. I love it when this happens. There was also, do you remember the episode of the Starlight Girl who got hooked on pills?
Yes. Yep.
Like a Jesse Spanner situation?
Yeah.
Oh, my
God.
Yeah. I'm so scared. Yeah, that wasn't Jem. That was Jesse. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Yeah, I remember after school I'd watch G.I. Joe, I'd watch Transformers, I'd watch Gem and the Holograms because I was well-rounded.
Yes. Yeah, you did it all. Hey, you already proven. You had Hulk Hogan Wrestling Buddy and you were into Gem.
Yeah.
You had all the facets covered.
That's why this show is ideal for you.
Yeah.
This is,
I'm an onion.
That's so funny. I really thought that was like, no one else is going to love this
well,
much
you shouldn't.
I did because it was so bad.
Yeah.
And I should have known.
Yeah.
I should have known.
Well, for my next pick, it's actually sort of two Hall of Fame cinema movies in my mind that are really on a theme, which is super nerdy teen boys and what they'll get up to.
Oh. Mm.
First movie, Weird Science.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Weird Science. This movie I watched a lot, and it has Anthony Michael Hall and another guy that I forget his name because he never went on to do anything else. And they are two teen boys that are sick of getting bullied by a baby Robert Downey Jr. Just a baby face Robert Downey Jr., but he's being a dick. And they're just sick of being losers. So they use their computer floppy disks and scanned in printouts of Sports Illustrated models to create a woman who is Kelly LeBrock.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Who they later
former
went on
wife
to
of Steven Seagal.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I was thinking of her like the don't hate me because I'm beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Ads. Yeah. And she, as a computer generated woman will do, she wreaks havoc in their lives. But she does dress them cooler. She gets them into clubs and stuff like that. But she also freezes one of the kids' grandparents. Mm. She turns his shitty brother, who is Bill Paxton, by the way, into a slug. She invites a Mad Max biker gang into the house for a final showdown to get the men to man up. And then at the end, she disappears so that they can have their crushes and gets, grab some boobs at the end, which is kind of what they do.
Yep.
So it's a tale as old as time.
And again, in this movie, the parents are nowhere to be found.
The parents are on a trip somewhere.
Yeah.
No. And in fact, one of the plot points is the grandparents actually, oh my God, they're going to stop by and they're going to check on the kid. And that's when they get frozen by the computer lady, Kelly LeBrock.
Mm-hmm.
So love that movie. Mm-hmm. But also there was another movie that was kind of similar in theme that came out this year called Real Genius.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see this one?
Yeah, with Val Kilmer. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Another very super nerdy boy goes to school for nerds, and he meets Val Kilmer, who is a brilliant nerdy boy who also is a smartass, though. Like, he doesn't take himself seriously like all the other nerds do. Like, he's just here. Yes, I'm super smart. I'm going to create this laser, whatever. But I'm also going to have a lot of fun while I'm doing it. And he teaches the young nerdy boy to live a little. I think he gets him to grab some boobs as well.
Whoa,
boobs
that's
are
how
everywhere.
You live. Huh?
Boobs
that's
are
how you live.
Everywhere.
1985. You're the boobs.
And really, it's a standard plot. I mean, there's not much to it. But the great part is that there's a final scene in a house that they've exposed to their evil professor and his plans to, like, I think there's Russians involved. And they fill this house full of popcorn as the Tears for Fears song, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, plays over the credits. Mm-hmm. And that's all you need to know.
That is all you need to know.
Science is fun.
Science gives you beautiful ladies that help you become not losers.
Yeah.
And gives you a house full of popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the first STEM
really
activities,
And in the movie The Real Genius, there's even some, oh my God, there's even some smart ladies at that school.
What?
Smart science girls. They get their boobs grabbed, but, you know. That's to be expected.
It's part of it. Mm-hmm. It's part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In Evan's current show choir show, they sing Weird Science at one point. Yeah.
Weird Science. Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean right away. I kind of thought of this.
Oingo Boingo. You can't go wrong with that. Which had Danny Elfman, who went on to score the Batman movies and like all the Tim Burton movies.
Yeah, the Simpsons
theme. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are two good ones. I wasn't sure where you were going to land on films because this was a pretty rich film.
Well, that's the thing. I have very favorite movies from this year, which are Goonies and Back to the Future. But I kind of I wanted to see what Heath would say for films.
Yeah.
I wanted
to
open it up for him because he's always the best with the films.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's very thoughtful.
What do you got? What's your last one? Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about The Breakfast Club.
Yes.
Yes.
Another Anthony Michael Hall.
Yes. He was omnipresent.
Sure
in 1985. The Breakfast Club is about five kids in Saturday detention for a variety of different reasons. And it's a John Hughes movie. Mm-hmm. So we love John Hughes. It's got Molly Ringwald, Emilio Estevez, Jed Nelson, Ali Sheedy, and then Anthony Michael Hall. Mm. I don't remember the principal's name, but he was in like every 80s movie as the jerk adult.
Always an authority figure.
But it was, they were all stuck. They were all very diverse students. There was the princess, the jock, the nerd, the outcast. And what was the last one? What was Jed Nelson?
He was the...
It wasn't the loser. They didn't call
like
him that.
Like a stoner?
Yeah.
It wasn't a stoner, though. No. But yeah, it was. It wasn't a burnout, was it?
Maybe that's what it was.
Okay. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so at the start of the day, they're all, they don't want anything to do with each other. And by the end of the day, they've sort of come together and they've decided to be friends. And they're running around the school. I don't really like, I'm not sure what they were supposed to learn about at Saturday school or detention because they were alone all day in this room and there were no, authority figures in there like watching
them
or anything.
Again, no adults to be seen anywhere.
No.
Yep. Yeah, no, but I remember watching the movie a lot. We watched it in sociology class in high school, like over two. There was a whole unit about it. Like we would watch the movie and then for several days afterwards we would talk about the sociology of it all. And we had a test and all this stuff. And it was kind of...
That's pretty cool.
It was one of those things. There were two things in our high school that... two lessons that were sort of almost famous. It was watching The Breakfast Club and learning about it. And then one of the English teachers, you would listen to We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel. And then you'd have to pick something he talks about. And then you'd have to write a paper on it.
That's a smart idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And especially the Billy Joel thing. It was just like... This is, you're listening to a song for 4 minutes, but it got people excited about wanting to do it because they thought it was cool that it was somehow tied in, music.
That's so clever.
Yeah, but, at the end of the Breakfast Club, everybody, there's best buddies. They've kind of wrecked the library a little bit, but not too much.
There's some making out. There's a makeover.
Yeah. Right, yeah, there's a makeover.
That's true. Uh-huh. Classic makeover.
Yep.
I don't think there's a lot of 80 movies without a makeover.
No.
Mm-mm. It was weird though because they didn't make her take off glasses. Like she didn't have glasses to start with, which seemed they just combed her bangs out of her face.
Yeah, instead she just was wearing all black. I really liked Ali Sheedy in that. And there was that one moment where Judd Nelson's character puts a knife down like on a table and you just see her arm just grab it and pull it back. That's pretty cool. That's an excellent movie.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it was a good one.
And I remember feeling like, especially that scene where they're all sitting around and they're talking about their trauma in their lives. And I remember thinking like, this is what being a teenager is going to be like. This is it.
I get to talk about it.
I get to talk about it.
I can talk about my jaw. I can talk about not going to the hospital. I can talk about still going to that funeral that I didn't know the guy.
Also, I have a detention story.
Do tell. Can't wait.
It was this year. It was in third grade.
You got a detention in third grade?
Which, that reaction is appropriate because in elementary school, only fourth and fifth graders got detention, but I got detention.
Oh, wow. What'd you do?
In third grade. I don't even know. That's the thing. Apparently, like...
I feel like this is mistaken identity or something.
Did you show up a boy or something?
Yeah. Did you do an actual science experiment? And they were like, no real learning, ma'am.
Also, my elementary school, this was the year I started third grade with Mrs. Lee, who was at least 110 years old. Like, she at least. And we were in, you know how, like, the schools, there'd be an old building and then there'd be a new addition, right? Mm-hmm. And so we were in the old building that was at least 110 years old. Mrs. Lee was always there from the beginning. And it was, you know, unair conditioned, and we were in the basement. Like, it was a dark year. And during the... They never fully explained to me why I got detention. Later on, I realized this is a sign of autism where I just don't – I had no idea what I did wrong. But it was something, like, so bad that I got detention out of all the school, like, the only third grader ever. I set a record.
I'm so confused by this.
Yeah, I don't know. But I remember, like, being in detention with the older kids, and I was like, oh, this isn't that bad. Like, I get to do my homework and stuff. It's fine. Okay. But the main thing was, how do I not have my parents find out? So the rest of the school year, I was sweating bullets every single day because I'm like, somehow this is going to come out. I should have known. I mean – my parents didn't take that much of an interest, so I should have known I'd be fine. But what it really boiled down to was all year I was terrified there was going to be, like, a note on the report card that said something about, like, you know, Amy's the first third grader to get detention ever. And, you know, because I had to show my report card to my parents. And so I remember, like, that final day just sweat, and, like, opening it up with shaky hands and, you know, nothing. There was nothing there. And I was like, oh, my God, I got away with it. And then I felt sort of powerful, and then I felt sort of sad.
This feels like, first of all, in today's world, if you got a detention and didn't totally understand why, this is headline news on CNN. Because these parents are suing the district because you put their third grader in detention. That's one. Two, I have a sneaking suspicion that it was probably like you pointed out that whatever your teacher said was not right. Like, no, that's not, no. Climate change is real. And she was like, okay, that is it. That is it.
Stop talking about the goddamn Russians, Amy. Yeah. Just go to detention.
We're done. Detention.
That could be it. Honestly, I blocked all that out. I have no idea.
What could it have possibly
idea.
Been? You're like no an idea. Obsessive rule follower.
Yeah. I don't know.
Can you call the school and see if they have a record of it?
That school is now a church, I don't think so.
Okay. Dang it.
Yeah.
Why was there a rule that third graders couldn't get detention?
Great question. These are great questions that, again, I have no idea. But I do know that it was a huge deal that I got this and that, like, I sort of got a reputation for it because, only fourth and fifth graders got detention. And then it was only, like, 5 years ago that I told my parents.
Are they still angry?
No, they were like, what?
I have a sensitive question to ask. And I recognize the sensitivity. Just know that before I ask it. Is it possible that this rule is the same as the eating before the hospital rule in that it was a rule but not really?
You could be absolutely right.
Like, was it a thing where she...
You were so bad, you're the only third grader.
Yeah, it feels like someone either really rubbed that in on purpose, which just seems mean, or two, you just had never seen anyone get detention. Somehow you managed to get it, which is in and of itself shocking. You're like, fuck, I'm the only third grader that's ever gotten detention. Mm-hmm.
These are absolutely valid questions that could be right. And there is no source to go to find out the truth. So
I am outraged on third grade Amy's behalf. I feel like we could take this to Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Do you think if you visited Mrs. Lee's grave, you'd have closure?
Huh. Good question.
You're assuming she died.
I hope she did.
That bitch.
Not a pleasant person. This is our
first, like, on the spot. We're gonna take it to her grave. We're gonna do our next recording.
Should we do a live show where I piss on the grave? All right, cool. Ooh, I got Aaron to shoot water out of her.
Oh my god, not what I meant.
The answer to that question is always yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Also, then I had a visual of Heath and I just standing there awkwardly with our backs to right. while you pee.
We had to form a shield so passerbys can't see
you. Me not able to pee because you guys are listening. And I'm like, I need to do this.
Heath and I, it's me, Heath, and Heath's WWE buddy, so that we have an extra body.
Maybe you can teach me some wrestling moves and I'll do that, like on her grave, you know, somehow. And,
okay, now we're in Saltburn territory. Easy, bring it back.
You're right. I'm sorry.
You can drop an elbow on that grave.
Okay. Wow. I'm sorry for third grade, Amy. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry it wasn't the Breakfast Club, that it didn't turn out.
I know. My high school was not like the Breakfast Club, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, you could have given somebody a makeover. You could have really changed someone's life in detention.
Yeah. Rude.
Yeah.
Well, my final one is a popular drink that you might not have known. Went through a whole different iteration because sometimes companies are dumb. Mm-hmm. And in April 1985, Coca-Cola said, you know what? Our product isn't good enough. We're going to introduce a new Coke.
I knew you were going to do this one.
You did?
I knew it. Yes.
I was going to ask you which one you thought because you said on Friday.
So I had it here just in case Aaron doesn't cover it.
Yeah. I did. Well, what I love about this all came out of the blind challenge that Pepsi started doing, which was blindfolding people, giving them Coke and Pepsi and saying, which do you prefer? And people were overwhelmingly choosing Pepsi. And the higher ups at Coke had their marketing meeting and were like, shit, we're losing every blind challenge. What happened? So they came up with a new recipe and they marketed it as new Coke. And they, like, doubled down. They said, not only is this the new recipe, we will no longer sell the old recipe. And, in fact, we're putting that recipe in a vault, and we're locking it away. It's never coming out.
It's like Disney, putting it in a vault.
Yeah. The direct quote from the president at the time was, never to see the light of day, which is very strong language for a recipe.
I say to you, that is too bold.
Yeah.
Too bold, sir. When 79 days later you reverse course, but... Because, no shocker, people freaking hated it. Mm-hmm. They went nuts. They were getting 5,000 to 8,000 angry phone calls a day Coke facilities complaining about the recipe. How can I get the old one?
Oh, whatever. My God.
And they said at the time, the president said that it was a lesson in understanding brand loyalty. Like, they didn't take into account that for some people it was just that it was Coke. It wasn't even a matter of, like, I prefer the taste of Pepsi, it's just what I buy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they, after 79 days of negativity, they said, fine, we're gonna bring back our old formula, we're gonna call it Coca-Cola Classic. Mm-hmm. There you go. The news conference where they decided to do this interrupted daytime TV. Like, Dan Rather interrupted As the World Turns and said, hey, Coca-Cola Classic is back. And as a nation, we all said, thank you for riding that ship. What?
Yeah. I was like, why aren't we breaking into the news about the Russians, Dan Rather? Come on now. Yeah,
that's what Amy was saying. Uh-huh. That's what you were saying. And then you got detention. I said, fine, I won't talk about New Coke anymore. It was so bad. This blunder was so bad that at the time, people thought they did this on purpose. Like, they purposely did this bad recipe to make people want it back. It got all this, right? People were talking about Coca-Cola nonstop. And the president said at the time, the president of Coca-Cola Corporation said, the truth is, we're not that dumb and we're not that smart. So I find it shocking he didn't go on to run, I don't know, like DeSantis's campaign.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He just said, no, we're not that smart and we're not that dumb. So
what was that supposed to convey to people?
I don't know. Like, this was just truly a mistake. I guess. Yeah. Huh. We couldn't think that through enough to come up with that as an idea. And we also didn't think through the bad idea enough to realize how bad it was.
So while he was saying that, he was thinking about his marketing meetings and like, damn it, we did wrong.
Damn it.
We listened to Larry. The wrong dude. Larry.
You said this was a slam fucking dunk. At some point in the 2000s, they brought New Coke back. Like, they did it for a little bit, you know, to let people taste it or try it. And again, it failed. So I don't know whose grand. Again, that sounds like another meeting where you forgot you had a meeting, got in there. They're like, we need a new great idea. And they're like, I don't fucking know. Bring back new Coke. Yeah. They're like, genius. Done. Done. That didn't go bad enough for us the first time.
All right.
Let's do it.
It'll be nostalgia this time around. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be perfect. It's no problem.
It's
also
fantastic.
It all hinges on this idea that that Pepsi challenge was all on the up and up, too. Uh-huh. It's like they never heard of actors. Mm-hmm. Well, no, real people on the street are saying they freaking like Pepsi better. We got to do something about it. It never occurred to them, like, oh, that's a Pepsi commercial. Perhaps they paid the people to pick the
Perhaps they just kept filming people until they got people to say,
yeah. Perhaps it was Pepsi. Just Pepsi in both cups.
Yep.
Perhaps. Mm-hmm. Oh, these poor marketers don't know the tricks. See, that's where they failed.
Yeah.
They didn't know the right tricks.
Yeah. They're the guys that today are like, what? They use glue to pour onto the cereal to make it look thick and delicious?
Right. Well, my final one is in May 1985, they discovered a hole in the ozone.
Mm.
Oh, no.
And what's fascinating about this, though, is the response to it. So in May, the scientists from the British Antarctic Survey announced that there was a large hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica. And technically, it was more like a thinning. It wasn't a real hole. But the term... the term ozone hole stuck because they were just visiting glory holes all the time. So they were just like, we got to use the hole. Got to use the hole terminology. Yeah. And they reported that this hole had opened every spring since the 1970s.
Yep.
But they suggested that, all right, I'm going to try this. Chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs. Mm-hmm. Which were chemicals used in refrigerants and propellants and hairspray, mm-hmm. were causing it. So, you know, the hole was a problem because it let extra UV radiation through the atmosphere. And like I said, our skin is stupid. And so our skin was getting burnt. But get this. This was announced and people were actually alarmed by this news that the environment was being affected. Uh-huh. And the world reacted and they heavily regulated CFCs. And so now you can't really find them anywhere, and that reduced the ozone hole.
This is also how you got your detention. You know that, right? Because you said it's not a hole, it's thinning. And your teacher said, no, it's a hole. And you said, no, that's what they're saying, but it's a thinning.
And then I said, you can't use your hairspray, Mrs. Lee, because you're making the ozone hole bigger.
Yes.
That's what I said.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was just fascinated by the fact that, like, this news came out, the world was like, oh my God, you're absolutely right. Science is real. And then went and changed the laws.
Because we used to have accepted facts, right? We used to believe in truth.
And then we solved it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's fascinating that, you know, I mean, it's been 40 years since then where we've just completely denied that we have any impact on the environment, even though this was an actual case of where we stopped using these chemicals
and it
repaired itself. Mm-hmm. So, you're right. This is how I got detention. And I was very much like a smarty pants know-it-all when I was, obviously not now. But, so I probably was lecturing people about this stuff all the time.
As you should have been. There was a thinning slash hole.
Slash hole. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry to end us on a bummer.
No, I think it was a great place to end. That's exactly where we should be.
It's holes. Holes that holes that open in the spring. Since the 1970s. Just holding firm.
Perfect.
Yep.
But I have a very, like, I remember growing up feeling like, hairspray, what are you doing?
Yeah,
don't
absolutely.
Use hairspray. I mean, that definitely stuck in the
stuck
conscience.
Yeah. Somehow they did a marketing meeting and they decided this is the way to go. And whatever PR campaign it was, it worked.
Mm-hmm. Coke should have hired those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The ozone layer guys. The hairspray.
Oh, 1985. What a wild year.
What a year.
And you know, what did we learn today? I learned that Heath really, really loves wrestling and that it's a big part of his childhood. And that makes me happy.
That felt right.
Yeah.
That felt right.
Off air, because we took a bathroom break, I asked him if he would make a costume for the future.
Oh, yeah.
And he said yes. So, you know.
Good. Yeah. Oh, terrific. Terrific. I love that. Actually, if we ever do a live show.
Yeah.
I think we should all dress up as wrestling characters.
Or you can go as wrestling, you get some earrings and be like Gem and the Holograms.
Gem and the Holograms. Yeah. Yes.
And I'll do the Handmaid's Tale. I don't know.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Or Weird Science.
I will
weird
say
Science, that's it. Yeah. About,
I feel like in real life, Jem's hair would be terrible. I feel like in cartoon form, it was good. That was the other thing about that that I didn't bring up is that when they would, rarely they would show these characters as children, but like they all had, like Pizzazz had green hair when they showed her as a little girl. It's like she just came out with green hair.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. In person, that would be alarming. But, I mean, if you look at the picture of her as the hologram, it's giving you housewives hair. It's big.
It's great hair.
It's really fluffy.
Layers.
Yeah, layered. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But I do love that suddenly, she just sprouts hair double the size that she had.
Mm-hmm. And it's a hologram.
You're right. It's a hologram. It's and science. Suddenly, it's
science. Even though it's a hologram and being projected over Jerrica, I like that it just blew her sleeves off.
Uh-huh. Yep.
The hologram did.
It's and just added a little, cut her sleeve or cut her neckline.
Definitely.
So we could see more boobs.
Yeah.
Because 1985, boobs.
Boobs. The year of boobs.
Boobs.
That's what I learned.
Yeah. Well, it's been real, everybody.
So real.
We'll return again with another episode. We'll see how boobs are in that year. I mean, I'm sure they're still going to be on display a lot.
Do a boob check-in.
Yeah. Do it.
On display, on display.
Can I be the boob correspondent?
Yes. Yes. So, next time
never
you'll get a
been
report.
More qualified.
The most qualified man ever will report on the state of boobs in every year.
Yes.
Until then.
Fuzzy Memories is a Broads and Books production. It's hosted by Heath Smith, Aaron Johnston, and Amy Lee Lillard. The show is produced by Amy Lee Lillard. Follow us at Fuzzy Memories Pod on Instagram for clips and highlights. And follow us at Broads and Books Productions for updates on new shows coming your way. See you next time.